Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage from around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district, right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
This show is brought to you by Doc Sports Services. Today on Listen In with KNN, I'm welcoming in Washington Redskins royalty as I welcome in a man who knows all about the team, Mike Richmond, the accomplished Redskins historian. Mike will join me right here on Fox Sports Radio, 96.9 FM and 1340 AM. Yes, this show is for all of you Washington Redskins fans who are counting down to the season. And with that, it means it's time to sit back, relax, and get ready to listen in and follow along with the conversation using hashtag ListenInWithKNN. Now this week, we'll be getting straight into our action-packed show right here after this quick commercial break. Looking for winning sports picks and predictions? Since 1971, Dot Sports has been recognized as one of the most trusted names in the sports handicapping industry. For the listeners of this very show, Doc Sports is giving out $60 worth of their premium member picks for free. These are the exact same premium member picks that 1,000 of their current members pay for. And guess what? You get them for free. Just text the word radio to the number 29022. Text radio to the number 29022 for instant access. Doc Sports also provides free picks on every single game. You want NBA picks? Simply Google search Doc's NBA picks. NHL picks, Google search Doc's NHL picks. Need MLB picks? Google search Doc's MLB picks. Remember to text the word radio to the number 29022 and start winning today with Doc Sports Service. Welcome back to Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district and beyond. It's now the time to welcome in the man doing it big here in the nation's capital, Mr. Mike Richmond. Mike, how are you?
Hey, Kelsey, how are you doing?
I'm wonderful. It's always good to have you in. I feel like I only get to see you in the press box, so now it's good to bring you from the press box onto my show.
Yes, we do each see each other occasionally at the FedEx Field press box, and, you know, I guess that's that's the place where we should see each other. I mean, you covering the Redskins and me covering the Redskins as
yeah.
well, and, you know, going to games there. You know, it's kind of like the Redskins are the top game in town. I don't want to dismiss entirely, you know, the Capitals and
right.
Wizards and Nationals, but
yeah.
The Redskins really, they do own this town in terms of sports
yeah.
interest.
It's definitely a football town. I say that all the time. And being from this area like yourself, I think you can both attest to that. People really get behind the Washington Redskins, and it doesn't matter how their season is. You will still always see Washington Redskins gear around town. Am I right?
And you are right. I mean, emotions really do run high regarding the Redskins in this area. Number one, the area, the D.C. area, was without a baseball team for, I think, more than three decades.
Right.
The Senators moved out in 1971, and then the Nationals didn't start play here until 2005. So more than three decades,
right.
I think a lot of people lost interest in the sport. And the Capitals, you know, they've had their mostly downs in the playoffs over the years. Now is a different season, obviously, but that has really, you know, zapped the emotions in a lot of people. And then, you know, the Wizards really have been, you know, just a little better than mediocre.
They've
you know,
always been consistent, I feel like. We know how they're going to finish, right? We know they're not, unfortunately, going to the Eastern Conference Finals, but we know they'll do pretty well and get to the playoffs, but we know, unfortunately, the playoff run usually ends with the Wizards. And as you said, I mean, being without a baseball team for that long, and even now I think people, not everybody, especially people who live here, can still get fully behind the Nationals. You know, a lot of people have to go over to other teams, especially our next-door neighbors over in Baltimore, the Baltimore Orioles. So I think you're right. Like, baseball, it's still, Nats games are fun. They're pretty cool. Capitals, yes. Basketball, yes. But still, there's no place like FedEx Field on a Sunday or Thursday night for that
right.
matter, because we're a football town.
Well,
go to FedEx Field,
let me,
I'm telling.
Oh, right,
yeah.
right. Let me just add one thing about D.C., though, and basketball. Mm-hmm. I mean, this really could be a great basketball town. And, the town has produced so many great players and over the years. And I think it could the town could really galvanize behind the Wizards if the Wizards would develop some repeat winning seasons of really legitimate seasons. And, because so many teams make the playoffs in the NBA these days and the NHL as well, but so many teams make the playoffs. It's like you can almost, walk in to the playoffs. So, but the town really wants to see the Wizards make a really strong run in the playoffs.
And that's such a good point. And I what comes to mind is that image of John Wall jumping on that scorer's table and claiming that this is his city, right? I feel like everyone has got behind John Wall. And I think he took on a task that was hard because I think for so long all the fans here loved Gilbert Arenas. And then we kind of know how that whole Agent Zero saga went. So nobody knew, I don't think, if another player would be able to capitalize and galvanize fans. But then here comes John Wall, and he has us all on his back. I mean, D.C. loves John Wall. Now, we wish he could get some more pieces, right, to get them to hopefully a conference finals at least. But I think basketball here is growing. I mean, you do see more Wizards fans getting behind it. And really, basketball, I mean, like you said, even though it's a long season, and as you said, a lot of teams go to the playoffs, the Wizards fan base is growing here. And I think D.C. is still trying to become that sports town. And I think all the other sports are catching up. I mean, we both know we have the Capitals in the playoffs, which is so nice, Mike, to say they got past the Penguins. Finally, right?
Oh, right. Well, I was joking with a friend of mine. This buddy of mine, he's from the Pittsburgh area, and of course he's a huge Penguins fan. And right when the series got started and the Penguins won the first game and the Capitals blew another 2-0 lead in that first game. So he was saying, oh, yeah, Penguins are going to walk right through this series and, the Capitals have no chance. And sure enough, we've heard only radio silence since the Capitals won that series. But it was a major surprise really to everyone that the Caps did pull it out.
Right, like the Capitals, I mean, they lived up to our expectations, finally. And then the Wizards, we thought they would get past the Raptors, and guess what? They didn't. So the playoff hopes ended here early. But nonetheless, football season, I can't believe it. We're already talking about it, Mike. That's why I had to have you on. And for people that don't know you, I want to give them a little bit of background about you, if that's okay with you.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
All right, wonderful. So Mike is the Redskins historian. Yes, there is a Washington Redskins historian. So pretty much if you have a question about the Redskins, Mike Richmond is the guy that you need to go to. He is also the author of the Redskins Encyclopedia and the Washington Redskins Football Vault. He's also the co-author and editor of Joe Gibbs, An Enduring Legacy. Then, if that's not enough, he's also a contributor to Redskins.com, which, of course, is the Washington Redskins team website. And also, he's working on a book, the biography of the legendary Redskins coach George Allen. So, Mike, I don't see how you find the time to do all these different things and how you keep all of this stuff in your head. But let's break down Redskins historian. What does that entail? Like, I mean, pretty much, do you have people coming up to you just expecting you to know every single fact about the Washington Redskins team?
Well, I don't think they're saying he's going to know who played for the Redskins on their 1936 team at end or whatever. they don't expect me to reel off names of every single player who has played for the Redskins over the years or every single little statistic. But people do expect me to know the basic things about Redskins history, the highlights, and be able to expound on them, which for the most part, I'm able to do. And it's just, I grew up in the D.C. area. I remember just a little bit from the 1960s, but when George Allen came here to coach the Redskins in 1971, I became hooked on the burgundy and gold. I mean, I would just have these huge emotional swings based on how well they did, whether they won or lost, and it really affected me one way or another. And so that's when I became a true Redskins fan. And then, of course, they had the great Joe Gibbs years in the 1980s, winning 3 Super Bowls during that era. So it was really in the 70s and 80s, which unfortunately a lot of people in this area weren't a part of. They, in terms of really following the Redskins back in those days, those were the great years for the Redskins, and the true glory years were in the 1980s during the Joe Gibbs era.
Yes, Yes, and we're hoping that we can bring back those glory days now, right? Everybody here might want the championship, so we're hoping to get back to those glory days. And I just have to ask you, though, I mean, what do you think? Washington Redskins are one of the top, like, the top money-grossing franchises in football. So just tell me, in your opinion, I mean, what makes them a team that so many people, even outside of the D.C. area, can get behind and really, you know, want to cheer on each and every weekend during the football season?
I think it's the history of the Redskins being so established in this area.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you have to go back to the 1930s. They moved here to Washington in 1937 from Boston, where they played their first
right.
five seasons. And their very first season in Washington, they won the NFL championship. Back then, there was no Super Bowl. But
mm-hmm.
So they won the NFL championship in 1937. So a lot of people got on the bandwagon right away. And they had
right.
some huge names, too. They had Sammy Baugh and some other, I think they had like three other future Hall of Famers on that team. And so all these, you know, caravans of Redskins fans just emerged. And I think it's just been passed down from one generation to the next.
Right.
And then, of course, again, the Redskins had those great years in the 70s and 80s. I will say, though, they had some down years after World War II, from like 1946 and through the 1970s season. They didn't
mm-hmm.
even make the postseason. So those
wow.
are some, yeah, that was a long stretch. That's a quarter century stretch
yeah.
where they didn't even make the playoffs. And so those were down years for the Redskins. But then when George Allen came here in 1971, they became one of the NFL's top teams and, of course, went
right.
to Super Bowl VII in the 1972 season, and then, of course, Joe Gibbs. So a lot of people remember that, too, and they're yearning for a return to those days. And so it originally started in the 30s, and it's been passed down, and with the Redskins being so established in this area,
mm-hmm.
They're so iconic in the D.C. area.
Yeah.
So that's basically, you know, how they're so well-known around here and how people, many people expect so much from them.
Right. I mean, like you said, they have such just a historic legacy. And then if you've been to FedEx Field and you hear those fans singing that fight song, I don't think there's anywhere else quite like that. Like, everyone gets behind it and you hear it in their hearts. I mean, this team is what they live and breathe. I think fans here live and breathe Washington Redskins football. So if you go to a game, you know the excitement behind that. And Mike, you mentioned George Allen. And let's stay on that topic, because right now you are currently writing a biography of George Allen. So tell me a little bit about that process, and what do you want people to take from him that you don't think they currently know about when he was coaching the Washington Redskins?
Well, first, there's a lot of research that goes into a project like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a full biography about him from his childhood until when he passed away. And I think
right.
people basically know that he is one of the greatest NFL coaches of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, he's number five all-time in NFL winning percentage at .686. And that percentage is actually down a little bit because he didn't have a great playoff record. He was 2-7
mm-hmm.
overall in the playoffs. Regular season record is like 7-12 all-time. I think he's number three. But when you include the playoffs, he's like .686, which is still phenomenal. He's number five among the all-time greatest. And so that part is, you know, a lot of people do know that about him, and they know about the fact he was a pioneer on defense and special teams in the NFL. He introduced
mm-hmm.
Various schemes on defense that are still part of the fabric of the game today, like the nickel defense with
yes.
five defensive backs, the dime defense
mm-hmm.
with six defensive backs, special teams. He hired the first special teams coach in the NFL in Dick Vermeil, who
mm-hmm.
himself is a legendary NFL name. He hired him as a
right.
special teams coach when Allen coached the Los Angeles Rams in the 1960s. I believe Marv Levy was also hired by the Eagles in 1969
mm-hmm.
as a special teams coach as well. So those were the first two in the NFL. But Allen really put so much emphasis on special teams. He thought that his special teams would win two games a season for them, for his teams, the Rams and the Redskins.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, that came true so often. So, you know, he really emphasized those aspects of the game. And he was also very detail-oriented, and he really lived football. And what One thing I'm trying to explore in this book that I don't think the question has really been answered fully is that Alan had these acrimonious relationships with his owners. He didn't get along that well with Dan Reeves with the Los Angeles Rams. He coached the Rams from 1966 to 1975, full seasons. And Reeves actually fired him twice. He fired him after the 68 season, and he brought him back cause after a player revolt. And then he fired him again after the 1970 season, and that's when Alan came to Washington in 71. And Alan also was sort of at odds with Edward Bennett Williams, the Redskins president, who ran the he ran the front office at the time, and they didn't really get along that well, and you know, led to Alan being let go after the 1977 season. So it's kind of a paradoxical situation, is that Alan was such a great coach. He had a phenomenal record coaching the LA Rams for those five seasons. He turned them around. The Rams were a sorry team when he took them over in 66, and he turned them around. They became a powerhouse. And then he basically did the same thing to the Redskins when he took over. But at the same time, he had these really antagonistic relationships with these owners. So I just want to explore what that was all about. And like one theory I have is that Alan sort of, he liked supporting the underdog. That was sort of his life. He liked underdogs, and maybe there was something about the wealth of these owners that rubbed him the wrong way, and you know, just their power and wealth or whatever. You know, he just didn't get along with them. So I'm gonna explore that. But the other thing that needs to be added to that story is that when Alan was let go by the Redskins after the 1977 season, he did go back to the LA Rams, and he coached there for two preseason games, and he was let go by Carol Rosenblum, the Rams owner, after just two preseason games. That didn't appear to have anything to do with a bad relationship with Rosenblum. I think the players just didn't like Alan, and Rosenblum just said, you know, your time is come. You're not, we don't think you're going to be a good coach here. So after that, he never coached again in the NFL, and I think he was blackballed. If that's the belief, he was blackballed from coaching, never coached again and in the NFL. And so I think he, you know, the thing that he didn't get along with his owners, I mean, word, you know, got passed around, the owners talked to each other, and so he never coached again. So it's the one thing I want to explore and find out why that happened regarding Alan. Why did he have these bad relationships with the owners when he was such an amazing coach? I'm sorry if it was long-winded, but...
No, that was great, honestly, because, and that was my kind of leads up to my next question, because in your opinion, I mean, do you think in history books and how people have it when they talk football and football coaching, do you really think that George Alan has gotten the respect that he deserves? I mean, you know, in terms of just his coaching legacy, because I personally don't think he does get enough credit for it. I mean, he did so much. I mean, late, great George Alan, as you explained all, I mean, you can look at his winning percentage, but to me, it doesn't seem like he fully gets that credit for all of the great things he did as a coach.
Well, I believe that credit has come more so in recent years. And as evidenced by the point, he was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2002. I mean, that's the top honor that you can get in football. So he was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2002. And I really don't hear anybody today saying anything negative about George Alan, the coach, you know, in terms of what he did, you know, for the during his days coaching the Redskins or the Rams. So nobody is cynical about him that I know of. And so I think he is well respected today. And that cynicism did exist during his coaching days, because even we know with Bill Belichick today, you know, he makes a questionable move in the Super Bowl with I forgot the name of the safety or the defensive back he kept out of the Super Bowl, the Eagles,
and he was crying about it, right?
Exactly.
He couldn't play
and
the game.
So
biggest game
Belichick
ever.
What's that?
I said, right. I mean, he kept out the person who a lot of people think could have changed that whole Super Bowl and maybe had the Patriots on the winning side of the ball game.
Exactly. Well, it's just an example of, you know, Belichick, even the winner of five Super Bowls, in, you know, today during his coaching days, he's still criticized. So Allen took his fair share of criticism during his coaching days. But I think he is well respected today in NFL coaching circles and even among the public. I think people, you know, a lot of people have shown interest in my project, and they do want to read the end results. So I'm very happy, very excited about the project, and I'm looking forward to the release in a few years.
Nice. Okay, so a few years. We have to wait that long, Mike, to read these great things that you're writing about George Allen.
I can't crank it out right away, but I have done a lot of research and some of the writing already. But I do have a deadline, and the book is supposed to be published in 2021. So, you know, we're looking at about 3 years from now. But and that will actually be it's timed well, because that'll be 50 years from the time Allen began coaching the Redskins in 1971.
Right.
So there is that tie-in.
Yeah, like the perfect anniversary special with your book. Oh, that's great. And then we'll talk about a book that you've already written, and that was the Redskins Encyclopedia. So kind of take me through that process, and what do you hope fans took from that project?
Well, that was a very, very tedious project. It took me.
I'm sure.
It took me about
the whole encyclopedia.
It took me about 7 years in all, from the time that I put pen to paper until that book was published. It was a grind in terms of, you know, going back to the Redskins' origins, which really started before they became a franchise in 1932. It started in the 1920s when George Preston Marshall conceived of the franchise, and he originally owned a basketball team here in D.C. and he was a very well-to-do businessman as well. And through that league, he met several people who were involved in the National Football League, such as George Halas, one of the fathers of the league, and so that led to his ownership of that franchise, which started as the Boston Braves in 1932 and became the Redskins the following season. And and then one thing led to another. Marshall wasn't too successful financially in Boston, so he decided to move to Washington, and the move kind of made sense because his laundry business was here in D.C., in the nation's capital, and so he moved here in 1937, and just the rest is history. But so I went season by season. In Redskins history, starting 1932 through the 2006 season. The book was published in 2007, and I did summaries of all of those seasons, and then I did bios on all of the Redskins who were in the Hall of Fame at the time, including the coaches, and I wrote bios of the rest of the who I thought were the Redskins' greatest players. And I chose all of them from the 70 Greatest team, which was announced in 2002.
Yeah.
And then I added about 10 or 15 names to that list. So you had quite a few player bios in that book. And then there's statistical heavy at the end of the book. There's all-time roster and all-time stats and all-time season-by-season records. So there is a lot of information in that book.
Wow. So basically, if you're a Redskins fan, you definitely need to pick that up because it has every single thing that you need. And also take me through the Washington Redskins football vault. What was the entire process like writing that?
That was it was sort of similar in the sense that I wrote the historical account of the book. I wrote the text for the book, which went all the way back to the origins of the franchise. And then that book came out in 2010. So I worked on it through the 2009 season, summarizing through the 2009 season. I didn't go season by season. I went more like era by era in that book. It's not as text heavy as the encyclopedia, but the memorabilia were really amazing in that book. They were replicas of so many items in the book, press passes, game program covers, you name it, there were replicas of so many different types of items. And that's what really made that book special. It was, I mean,
right.
the text I think was very special in itself as well. But the memorabilia were great too. And that book sold out actually 2 years
wow.
after it hit the shelves. It sold out in like 2012.
Yeah.
I'm hoping for a reprint of that book or an update of that book in a season or two. I have spoken with the publisher and hoping either in 2019 or 2020 that we'll be able to update that book.
Oh, that would be wonderful. And I know fans that rush back to the stores to get that. And, Mike, I had to save the best for last, and that is the name Joe Gibbs, which if you've been in this area and you are a true Washington Redskins fan, that name just gives you chills and shivers because of his great legacy. And so you also are the co-author and editor of Joe Gibbs, An Enduring Legacy. What was that project like? And just tell me, I mean, I feel like we always hear about Joe Gibbs, but was there anything that you think people don't know about him that you were able to express in that book?
First of all, let me say that the book was broken down into four chapters. Basically, the four ways his life was divided: the Redskins, NASCAR, his involvement with Youth for Tomorrow, his foundation, and then his spiritual life. He's a very religious, devoted man. So the book was broken down that way. And I also want to say that book was published by Youth for Tomorrow, which is his foundation. So they did the publishing, and I handled the writing for the Redskins and NASCAR parts of the book. And it's basically a very photo heavy book. And I wrote all of the captions for the Redskins and NASCAR chapters, and there really isn't a whole lot that people wouldn't know about him, that information that's not in the in terms of the Redskins part of it, that isn't in the encyclopedia or the Redskins vault. People may not know a lot of details that were part of his NASCAR life, you know, who was part of his NASCAR teams and all of the success that he had had through NASCAR, and all of the fact that he you know, he won right away. He won the Daytona 500.
Yes,
like a
amazing.
Year after forming Joe Gibbs Racing. I think he won the Daytona 500 in 1993. So, which was, this guy is just, you know, he snaps his fingers and he's a winner. So, and the Daytona 500 is like the Super Bowl of NASCAR.
Right,
so
it's huge, right?
He won. You know, it's huge. He won that right away. I believe he's won the Daytona 500 again. He's won the NASCAR championship, which has gone through different sponsors, like the Winston Cup champion and Nextel, I believe. It's had different sponsors, but he's won that a few times as well.
Yeah.
So he's had drivers. Kyle Busch has been one of his big drivers. And so he's had a number of big names. So it was interesting writing for the captions for that, for the photos in that chapter, and I learned a lot as well about his NASCAR teams. I'm not devoted a NASCAR follower, but so I learned a lot as well. And then you have the Youth for Tomorrow and the spiritual chapters. So I was the co-author of the book. I wrote the Redskins and NASCAR chapters, and I edited the text in the entire book.
Wow. And I mean, just, I first met Joe Gibbs when I was actually working for NASCAR, and just seeing the love that the fans have for him, and then the former Redskins players that I've interviewed that he coached. I mean, everyone loves Joe Gibbs. And as you said, he's been so successful. It's like whatever he gets into, he finds success. But I think also outside of his just great skills in sports, I mean, everyone talks about how great of a person he is. And I know that speaks volumes, right? Because it just talks about and everybody, Mike, always talks about too, how he truly cares about individuals. So I feel like he just has this spirit and this aura that just drives everybody to him. And so Joe Gibbs' legacy will continue to live on. And hopefully we can bring back some of his magic to the Washington Redskins organization now. And with that, Mike, let's get into my Doing It Big in the D&B segment, and let's talk some Washington Redskins football. So the top news that really topped this season, Mike, was, of course, the Kirk Cousins, Alex Smith swap. It seems like everybody went crazy, Mike, in D.C. when this happened. Like, I think fans were expecting Kirk to leave, right? Because we pretty much knew that he wouldn't get the money that he wanted from the Washington Redskins organization. But I bet you many people did not think Alex Smith would be here donning burgundy and gold. Now, Alex Smith is 33 years old. He's 4 years older than Cousins. And so I think a lot of people had a problem with his age. And Matt, depends on how you look at 4 years older. But, of course, in sports, it's different. And then sending Kendall Fuller away, Mike, a lot of people weren't too happy about that. And, of course, also the third-round pick to Kansas City that they let go for Cousins walking in free agency. So tell me, Mike, I mean, what do you overall think about this swap? And if you think it's good, how do the Redskins benefit?
Well, first of all, I thought that the Redskins, in terms of not being able to re-sign Kirk Cousins, I may be one of the few saying this, but I think there's blame to go all around. I don't think it's entirely falls on the Redskins' shoulders that they weren't able to re-sign him, you know, phrasing it that way. I just think that there has to be give and take on both sides. And who knows what really happened behind closed doors.
Right.
You know, only the Redskins front office people. But maybe D'Angelo Hall said it best, and he encapsulated the whole situation with Cousins. His comments when Cousins signed with the Vikings in March were that we wanted to get the feeling that Kirk wanted to be here, and we never seemed to get that feeling. And, maybe it was the fault of Cousins. Maybe it was his agent. Maybe they were brainwashed in some way that thinking that Cousins is a better quarterback than he really is. I personally do not think he's an elite quarterback in the NFL.
Right.
I would put him.
And I agree with you on that.
Yes. I mean, you've seen enough of him. You know of his positives and negatives and his faults and choking in clutch situations. And
right.
I would put him at best, you know, maybe the 10th best quarterback in the league, 12th. He is not an elite quarterback. And the money that he was asking for, I just don't think he was worthy of that. And if the Redskins lowballed him, okay, so that's, you know, maybe it was like a counter offer. But there had to be some happy medium. And they just weren't able to reach that. And I think in the Cousins camp, they were thinking that Cousins is worth more money than, you know, the Redskins thought he's deserving of. And so, you know, that's where the disconnect happened. And as far as, you know, statistically, I thought, Cousins, hey, it's great that he had three straight 4,000-yard-plus passing seasons his 3 years as a starter. But we're living in a pass-happy NFL now. I mean, it's not the days when Sonny Jurgensen threw for more than 3,000 yards in the 1960s. I mean, it's not it's not as a wide open passing game as then. Now, I mean, it's much more wide open than in the 60s and even 70s and 80s for that matter. And quarterbacks are going to throw for 4,000 plus yards. And as well, you know, I hear that Cousins supporters say, "Oh, well, he didn't have any talent around him." Well, excuse me, he had two 1,000 yard receivers in 2016.
Yeah,
DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon.
Right, and it doesn't get much better than that. I mean, those are two gifts as a quarterback that you want. And I love that you bring up that point. I mean, I think Kirk Cousins, I say he's a mediocre quarterback. I mean, he did what you need him to do, but nothing more, nothing less. And I think that's what fans were getting tired of. I mean, we all know with the RG3 saga what happened, then he kind of got thrust into this position. But then I think fans got behind him. I mean, you like that, right? We were all saying that because of Kirk. But unfortunately, you said it. I mean, in the big situations, we didn't see him show up. And, of course, fans here want to get deeper in the playoffs and hopefully that championship. And I don't think anybody saw that happening with Kirk. And now, I think with Alex, you do get that veteran leadership. And when you look at the numbers, I mean, yes, you can look at the statistics. Yes, Alex Smith has thrown for more yards, and he does have more touchdowns. But I just think overall that veteran leadership is the unique aspect that Smith brings. And then he just has a different demeanor. I mean, he's not really a loud-spoken guy, but, I mean, he just does the job he needs to do. And in my opinion, Mike, it seems like the players are excited to have him. And I really think I think the city is beginning to get behind him, which is, you know, very important, especially in a town like D.C., because it's not an easy sports town to play in. But overall, I'm pretty pleased with the decision that they made. But I'm just curious to hear from you. If they didn't get Alex Smith, was there any other quarterback that you would want here in Washington? Because I think we both know the quarterback saga and the questions always come up, it seems like, season after season, because Washington hasn't been able to find that franchise quarterback that they want. So do you think Alex Smith is the franchise answer? Or if you could go back, I mean, who would you have selected to come here to Washington for Cousins?
Well, first of all, I'm not going to guarantee that Alex Smith is taking the Redskins to the Super Bowl. I mean, I'm just not going to come out and say that.
We can't say that, right.
What I think he gives the Redskins that Kirk Cousins didn't is the mobility with his legs.
He has
that mobility, and he has the ability to make plays on the run. And we actually saw that in the Monday night game last year between the Chiefs and the Redskins. I mean, he just ran circles around the Redskins that night. And
they couldn't do anything.
He did. I mean, he had just kind of freedom to run around the ends and to make plays, whether he wanted to actually run the ball or whether he wanted to buy time and find open receivers. And so that's what he brings the Redskins that Kirk Cousins didn't have. What Kirk Cousins tried to do last year, we saw him run a lot more, but he's more like a north-south type runner. Okay, he may, you know, like on a scramble, he may gain 10, 15 yards, but he's not going to be able to improvise as much as Alex Smith.
Right, no fancy footwork.
Right, statistically, they're very similar. And I don't think Alex Smith is necessarily what you would call the franchise quarterback, but I think the Redskins, I think he brings that to the Redskins that when a play breaks down, he'll be able to do that improvisation that Cousins wasn't able to. And on top of that, you know, what we saw with Cousins is, you know, throwing those interceptions in clutch situations. I mean, so many games were blown at the end. Three games I can count in 2016 where he did that. Last year, the season opening game against the Eagles, he threw an interception in the end zone with the game on the line. And so I don't think Alex Smith is necessarily that type of quarterback. He's much, he seems much more conservative than Kirk Cousins. And maybe that, you know, that conservative approach will benefit the Redskins. You know, Smith has been knocked for that he's way too conservative, he doesn't take chances. Well, maybe he won't throw that back-breaking interception at the end of the game.
Right. And as you said, I mean, we've been through that time and time again with Cousins, and it was always heart-wrenching because you knew if he just hadn't have done that, the game could have ended up another way, and I think you're right. And I think that's what differentiates them, but I think Alex will have a lot to prove, especially to the fans here in Washington. So it'll be interesting to watch him this season, but I think so far so good. I mean, I feel like he's really just kind of getting into the groove here in Washington and staying with the Washington Redskins, Mike. I now want to move on to the Hall of Fame. I can't believe it. I mean, that's always one of the best events in football. And I know you're excited, right, because you'll be going down to cover.
Oh, absolutely. I will be in Canton in August, and there will be a lot of Redskins fans there for Hall of Fame Enshrinement Weekend, of course, for Bobby Beathard.
Yes, you said it, Bobby Beathard, I mean. And this is one of the youngest groups in history in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I mean, you had Ray Lewis, Randy Moss, Brian Urlacher kind of headlined this Hall of Fame class, but Bobby Beathard, I mean, just all that he's done. I mean, he was a personnel executive for five teams in his career. Of course, this included the Super Bowl winners and the Miami Dolphins and the Washington Redskins. He was part of 10 division winners and four Super Bowl winners overall, including the 1972 Dolphins team that finished undefeated. So tell me, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I just want to say it's really about time regarding Bobby Beathard.
Yeah.
I think it was long overdue. I mean, he's one of the greatest general managers in NFL history. I mean, you said it. I mean, taking teams to or being part of teams that won four Super Bowls. I mean, two with the Dolphins and two with the Redskins, also being a part. and being a part of teams that went to seven Super Bowls overall, dating back to when he first became a scout for the Kansas City Chiefs in 1963, and of course the Chiefs went to the very first Super Bowl 1966, and then he worked as a consultant for the Atlanta Falcons in 2003. So over that 40-year period, he was part of teams that went to seven Super Bowls. I mean, that is amazing.
That's incredible.
I mean, when the name Bobby Beathard comes up, maybe, you know, speaking of more modern times, you may equate him with Ryan Leaf, you know, drafting Ryan Leaf, the Chargers in 1998. You know, but I think the good way overshadows that.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about it. Bobby Beathard, you can go on and on and on. I mean, let's just talk about some of the players that he helped bring to Washington through the NFL draft. I mean, this included fellow Pro Football Hall of Famers Art Monk, Gev'ross Grimm, quarterback Darryl Green, who I know everyone here in Washington gets excited to talk about. I mean, truly a talented individual. He also selected Redskins Ring of Fame members, Monte Coleman, Dexter Manley, I mean, Charles Mann, the list goes on and on and on. This guy was talented. I think Charles Case always said it best. I mean, he said, I mean, his induction is well-deserved. He said, I mean, he raised the Redskins to a new level of success. Is that something you can agree with, Mike, that he raised them to a new level of success?
Well, he did. And actually, when he took over as the Redskins GM in 1978, the Redskins, mm-hmm. because of George Allen and Allen's trading ways, they really were without draft picks. I think they had like one or two or maybe three mm-hmm. draft picks in 1978. Allen had just traded away so many of the picks. And it wasn't
right.
really until like starting 1979, but maybe more so 1980, that he had more draft picks to work with. But and then 1981, which he orchestrated the greatest draft in Redskins history, and you mentioned some of the names, Mark mm-hmm. May, Russ Grimm, Dexter Manley, Darryl Grant, Charlie Brown, Clint Didier,
yes.
and the free agent signing in Joe Jacoby. All of those guys
mm-hmm.
played key roles in the Redskins' Super Bowl era at one point or another, and some of them have, I mean, Jacoby has all three rings, and as well as
yeah.
Grimm, you know, having three rings.
Right,
so,
right.
But that was Beathard's draft, and even going back
right.
to 79, he drafted Don Warren and Rich Mallott and Monte Coleman and free agent signing and Neil Okowitz. And
mm-hmm.
like you said, in 1980, he drafted Art Monk, and then 83, Darryl Green. I mean, he had all these players, and actually one of the one of his secrets, his strategies, is that he liked to trade away his first-round picks a lot. He really didn't have
mm-hmm.
too many. I think he only had, in his 11 seasons with the Redskins, he only had two first-round picks. He traded
right.
them away a lot. He was trying to always find these gems that were in the later rounds. That was just one of his keys to being the GM. And, you know, you can't also dismiss what he did in the 87 season with the replacement team.
Yes.
He created the replacement team that stepped in for the regulars while they were on strike during
right.
the 87 season. That replacement team went 3-0, and they
mm-hmm.
they were just a bunch of guys off the street or players
right.
who had been cut previously by the Redskins or cut
mm-hmm.
by other NFL teams, or they were just free agents. One of them, Tony Robinson,
right.
Beathard negotiated with prison officials. He was on a work furlough. He had been some type of cocaine related conviction, and he got Tony Robinson off that work furlough. And Tony Robinson quarterbacked the Redskins in the upset, that great upset of the Dallas Cowboys, that third replacement game win during that series. And but that 3-0 stretch by the replacement team that gave, you know, put the Redskins at 4-1 when the regulars came back. And just ironically, I'll throw this in, I recently
mm-hmm.
was interviewing Richie Pettibone, the Redskins defensive
yeah.
coordinator, from that era and from that season as well. And he said, hey, you know, we would not have reached Super Bowl 22 without that, what the replacement players did. And it's really long
yeah.
overdue. You know, they're getting rings
yep.
now. They're getting Super Bowl rings.
Yes, finally. I think we're all saying it should have been happened, but I guess better late than never.
Well, absolutely, and I'm very, very happy, and I congratulate Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen and company for doing that. It is long overdue,
yeah.
but they are
yeah.
doing it, and
right.
not all of the regulars from that era agree with the replacements
right.
getting rings. But, you know, speaking to Pettibone, I mean, he said it best, said something that I have said all along, that that Redskins team, while it was very, very good, it was not great in the mold of like the 83 team or the 91 team. You know, those were
mm-hmm.
were fantastic teams going 14-2 in the regular season
right.
and reaching the Super Bowl. The 87 team was very good, but without the 3-0 stretch by the replacements, they would not have reached Super Bowl 22. And then, of course, that was the, you know, Doug Williams Super Bowl, you know, beating the,
yes,
the Denver Broncos in Super Bowl 22, the
right.
35-point second quarter explosion. That
yeah.
probably would not have happened without the replacement players.
And that's huge. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that was my next topic that I wanted to discuss. And that's what I wanted to end the show with, because I think that was kind of the biggest news to come out. I don't know if people saw it coming, but I think, of course, ESPN's 30 for 30 documentary, Year of the Scab, brought a lot of attention to that. Because I think some people had forgotten that team and what happened, as you said, I mean, that year. But basically, if you didn't see the documentary, it told the story of the replacement players who crossed the picket line to play for the Redskins during the three-week labor dispute that you described very well, Mike. And then most of these replacement players were actually released when the strike ended after week six. And then, of course, only those who remained on the roster and played in at least one or more game received a ring following Washington's 42-10 win over Denver in the Super Bowl that year. So the fact that they didn't get rings, I think, surprised a lot of people because you said it. I mean, without those games that they won, history obviously probably wouldn't be what it is now. And I think the fact that they're getting it, and I'm like you, Mike, I think better late than never. I know some people are saying, oh, it was too long. But they're finally getting them. And not saying that anything done wrong can make it right, but long overdue. And I'm glad they're getting the attention that they deserve. I mean, they were even honored in the Virginia General Assembly. I mean, this team, people here have not forgotten. And I know it probably means a lot to those guys because, as you said, they got them off the street. And these guys were able to do what they did. I mean, you can go on and on and on about that. I can't believe it's almost been 30 years. Isn't that, like, hard to fathom to you, Mike?
It is very hard to fathom. It's extremely hard to fathom. But one thing I want to say is that at least one of those replacement players created his own replica Super Bowl ring. This was before the Redskins announced that they were granting Super Bowl rings to all of the replacements, but at least one of those players created his own ring. I mean, they really wanted to remember their accomplishments and they wanted to be recognized. And, you know, I am happy for them. To be honest with you, at first I was kind of apprehensive about it. But, you know, then I kept saying to myself, that Redskins team, 87, would not have even reached the Super Bowl, no less won
without
the Super Bowl, without the accomplishments of the replacement players.
Yeah.
And getting back to Beathard for a second, one of the just, you know, this is his insight into what was going on. And it was also the Cooks, too, that knew about this, and Jack Kent Cook and his son John Kent Cook and Charlie Casserly, the assistant GM. They kind of sensed what was going to happen with the strike. They saw it coming like as early as training camp, I believe. And so they really started gathering their thoughts about forming the replacement team as early as that. Then, you know, thinking back in August, and then the strike started, I believe, like in late September, if not early October. So they already had their, you know, the plan in motion in terms of names of players that they wanted to acquire and sign. And so, and also, like you said, a number of those players did make the full-time roster, the regular roster, Craig McEwen, the tight end, who actually played a key role in that Redskins Monday night win over the Cowboys. And also Anthony Allen, who set a team record that exists to this day. He had 255 receiving yards in the Redskins win over the Cardinals in their first replacement game win. They 2021 win. And that record still exists to this day. And Allen, by the way, was at the screening for the 30 for 30, which I do want to note that I was a part of that 30 for 30.
Yeah.
I was interviewed for that. But Anthony Allen was there at the screening. Tony Settles, one of the linebackers for that team. David Windham, one of the linebackers. They were all there. So it was great to see them.
Wow. I mean, just all in all, I think that's such a good way to end. And I think the Washington Redskins, I think for a lot of people, that puts a warm feeling in their heart that finally, I think we all can say this team is getting the respect that they deserve with those rings. And I know it will mean a lot to those guys. And now, Mike, before we end, the Washington Redskins last season, 7-9, nothing to write home about. But this season, give me your overall predictions for how you think right now with what you see from the Washington Redskins. And, of course, a lot of pieces still aren't in the place. But what do you think your overall predictions are? I mean, are we going to playoffs? I mean, what do you think the Washington Redskins will do this season?
Can I just say this, Kelsey, and I don't mean to skirt the issue too much, but it's hard to give a record at this point.
Yeah.
But I will say that on paper, the draft looks very good. I think it's solid from top to bottom. I think those guys, at least five of those seven players are going to make an immediate impact. I mean, Geist, the running back, is, you know, he'll hopefully fix the running game, which was so bad last
year. People are excited about him and think he can do that.
Right. He's a home run hitter, and he's got the speed. I think he runs 4.440. I mean, he's a breakaway runner. And he's got power too. He benched 650 pounds squatted 650 pounds at LSU, and Payne, the defensive tackle, he'll make an impact. Tony Settles, the nose tackle from Virginia Tech, he'll make an impact. I'll say this. They're going to be better than 7-9 last year. They made a great move in re-signing Zach Brown. Let me just say, it's not going to be as bad as last year. And they were decimated by injuries anyway last year.
Yes.
So.
Oh, it was horrible. But yes, yeah, hopefully the injury bug doesn't hit us here in Washington again. Well, Mike, I have to thank you so much for joining me. It was a pleasure having you. And for all the Washington Redskins fans, now you guys know where to go to get your Washington Redskins news and history. This guy right here, Mr. Mike Richmond. Mike, thanks again so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Kelsey. I certainly appreciate you having me on your show.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. And for everyone listening, that's a wrap for this edition of Listen In with K&N. I hope you had fun, learned something, and of course, jumped in on the K&N bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every week for new shows that drop online at FoxSports1340AM.com and KelseyNicoleNelson.com. If that's not enough, the show is available for download on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support matter. Until later this week, enjoy the sports world, smile, and don't take your fantasy sports too seriously because there's always another play.
Follow Kelsey on Twitter at TheRealKNelson. You've been listening to Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM Fox Sports Radio.